Hey friends, I'm back. Season two. Woohoo! I wanted to give a little short note before I dive into the episode about two things. One, this episode was recorded with an infant nearby, and so it's a little choppy. I had to start and stop several times. I'm recovering from a cold, and Mama doesn't have time to perfectly edit it to get rid of all of the throat clearings and stuff. So just, I'm sorry in advance. It is not perfect, but as a new mother, I have to let go of perfectionism 100%. So just heads up around that. Second thing is I wanted to share a short announcement. I have decided, in honor of my daughter's birth, which was on January 4th, 2024 at 4 a.m., I am going to have a 40% off sale of Cervical Wellness Online in honor of spring from March 17th through March 23rd. And there will be a coupon code that will be my daughter's name, Trillium, T-R-I-L-L-I-U-M. And if you don't know what Trillium is, it's actually a wildflower that grows endemically to the United States, but here in my home area, the Trillium that grows around here is a beautiful little white and or purple flower that grows beneath the redwoods. And so just in honor of spring and in honor of my daughter's birth, I will be having a 40% off sale of Cervical Wellness Online, the digital course. And note about this, that if you ever join the online course, which, you know, has no live components, it's just the information and the resources and, you know, all of the to-dos that I would ever give you to do to help heal your cervix, that if you ever choose to join Cervical Wellness Online Live, which I run that program about once a year, and I'm definitely planning on running that in a few months, that you can join the live program for the amount of Cervical Wellness Online off. Now, if you get in on Cervical Wellness Online during a sale, you can still join the live for the amount of Cervical Wellness Online off without the sale price. So what I'm saying is Cervical Wellness Online is normally priced at $497. And I haven't done the math of what 40% off is. I probably should have done that before I recorded. But if you join the live, you would get $497 off, not what you pay at the sale price. So if you have been wanting to join CWO Live for any reason and you've wanted to do some financial finagling, getting in on a sale of the online course is your best bet, because there's no point in me charging twice for the content, right? So that's why I offer CWO Live to the alumni of just CWO for the amount that they've already paid off. And if you get it on a sale, you will pay less. So I just wanted to share that, because sometimes people ask me about financial help, financial support, and this is one of the simplest ways to receive that, is to get in on a sale if you want to join Cervical Wellness Online Live at a discounted rate. Okay, friends, I believe that is all the announcements I have. So that sale is going to be going from March 17th to 23rd, 40% off, with the code Trillium, T-R-I-L-L-I-U-M. And let's go ahead and start this episode.
We've got this.
Hey-yo, 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 hey-yo. Hey-yo, hey-yo, hey-yo.
We've got this.
Hey-yo, 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 hey-yo.
We've got this.
We're fine.
Hello, friends. It's me, Danelle. Welcome back to the first episode of season 2 of the Cervical Wellness Podcast. it has been several months since my last episode. It's because I have been through one of the biggest transitions, portals of my life. And, you know, the last episode of season one was about my preconception and conception journey, because at the time I was 9 months pregnant when that episode was released. And here I am recording the first episode of season two, 7.5 weeks postpartum. Now, I have been wanting to record this episode since my birth, actually. But friends, if you are a mother and if you've ever been a new mother, you will know that newborn care and transitioning into motherhood is quite the doozy, and my time has been limited. And so at this moment, baby is currently in a carrier being walked by her dad on the treadmill because she's fussy. And that gave me an opportunity to sit down and record this. I have taken some notes, hoping to bring this episode into somewhat of a coherence, because what I want to share with you today, I could get lost in the meandering of story and the multidimensional aspects of what I want to share with you. And that is my birth story, first of all, and second of all, the sense of failure that I have experienced of my rectifying the sense of failure that I have experienced from my cervix and my body, and how I am coming to terms with having a birth story that did not go in the way that I wanted, dreamed, desired, planned for, and how this has shifted my identity or sense of identity, or really just being in the doldrums of having my identity be obliterated from this birth experience. So I do want to give a little bit of a trigger warning regarding birth trauma, medical trauma. And if you are a person who also has birth trauma or medical trauma, and you are easily triggered by hearing about others' experience, this episode might not be for you. I'm obviously not gonna get into, minute detail, but just wanted to give a little trigger warning, because this story isn't beautiful. It's beautiful. What am I trying to say? It's beautiful in its own way, but it's not this is an incredibly empowering, rosy birth story. And for people who perhaps have their own traumatic birth, it might be re-traumatizing to hear about a birth that didn't go in the right way. Or it could be healing, for those who do have birth trauma, to know that they're not alone. I know for me, actually, speaking to other women who did not have the Instagrammable, empowering, home, free birth, has really helped me in my own mental health regarding what happened in my experience. So, where I've been in the last 3 months has been really just a life-shattering, life-altering experience of becoming a mother, and then also having all of my expectations of what birth would be like for me, my first birth, literally just go out the window. And, I will admit that I was and have been someone that it's like, yeah, you know, the body is amazing. Okay, obviously, if you've been following me and listening to my content, you know that I'm very pro body empowerment. And, you know, the body is intelligent and it knows what it's doing. And, you know, we can trust the body. And, you know, my mantra going into my saying that I was going into my birth with was, I trust myself, I trust my body. So that, like, that was, you know, what I was saying to myself over and over again as I got closer and closer to birth. And, you know, I thought I did all the things I needed to do, you know, stretching, I was visualizing, I visualized my birth, I wrote out a birth plan. I did, was planning a hospital birth for several reasons. One was financial. Midwives around here are a lot of money out of pocket, and I just didn't have that type of cash. And two, one of actually the biggest reasons was that we live over 30 minutes away from any sort of medical facility, and John, my husband, was really nervous about us trying to have a home birth without having any sort of safety net, especially for the first one, because in all the research that we did and people we spoke to is that generally the first baby for women can be the most difficult to birth because the body's never done that. And then subsequent births are easier on the body, more or less, because the body has done it before. And so he was just really nervous about, you know, if something went wrong, that we were pretty far away from any sort of emergency services. So, you know, my plan was to labor at home as long as I could. I had an incredible doula, and then transfer to the hospital when it was time, you know. Excuse me. I am riding the edge of a little bit of a cold, so I apologize if I clear my throat or if I have to cough. I will try to edit those out to the best of my ability. But as a new mom, who knows how much editing I'm actually going to do. So just caveat that it might be imperfect. So, you know, as I approached my due date, which was actually January 1st, I was talking to my baby and I started getting, like, you know, I was really big by the end. I had gained about 35 pounds throughout my pregnancy, and you know, I was doing all the things I thought I needed to do. And on December 31st at 11 p.m., so an hour before New Year's Eve, I felt the contraction starting. And it was very subtle at first, but the cramping shifted. And then by 2 a.m., I stood at the edge of the bed and woke my husband up, and I said, it's starting. Birth is starting. So for the next 12 hours or so, I just gently labored in my house. It wasn't too uncomfortable yet. I ended up needing to go sleep on the couch because I just didn't want to keep my husband up, because I started to, like, gently moan. And, you know, I realized that nothing really prepares you for the sensational experience of labor. Like, I just remember listening to so many birth stories and reading all the books and watching YouTube videos, but, like, to start to feel it in your body is like a whole other ball of wax. And I started, well, like, as the contractions, like, slowly started to increase, as my eyes were closed, I actually was having visions of my cervix. it wasn't like, oh, I'm seeing like an image of a cervix, but I would like close my eyes and I would like see this like toroidal image, like kind of like flashing in my third eye area, and it would like become this like more brilliant color. And I became like really aware that I was having these visions of my cervix, and I was like, yes, like this is working, okay, yes, like let's do this. And I like, as the contraction started to increase, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, let's open. Like, I was practicing everything I thought I knew to do, you know, like releasing my jaw, letting sounds come out, just like really trying to do my best to relax my pelvis as the contractions increased. And, you know, around like the next afternoon, my doula came and she was there with me laboring for a while. And, you know, it really started to pick up, like the sensations really started to increase. And, you know, if I'm honest, it started to get painful. And I was like, but it's not like pain like a cut, or it's not like pain like a broken bone. You know, the surging of the sensation just like starts to take over your body. And so by 10 p.m. that evening, so almost 24 hours since labor started, we decided to go to the hospital because it started to feel like it was really intense. And the midwives there checked me, did a cervical check, and they're like, you're only 1 centimeter dilated. And I was like, oh, no, was it one? Yeah, I was only 1 centimeter dilated. Sorry, I'm realizing now, I'm like, okay, I might have like blocked all this out. So I'm going to have to okay, real time, like pull it from my memory bank. They said I was only 1 centimeter dilated and that they couldn't admit me because they needed me to be at least 4 centimeters dilated before they admit me. And I was like, oh God, I'm only 1 centimeter dilated, like after like 12 hours so far. Okay. Like, so they sent me home, and my doula went home, and that night I just labored in bed. And you know, I was only 1 centimeter dilated, but the contractions were getting more powerful. The surges were really picking up, and so I would like brace myself on the edge of the bed, and like every like 7 minutes or so, just like have to like moan out the feeling of the contraction. And my husband was laying next to me, and I did this all night. I really didn't sleep all night. And so then the next day, you know, still laboring, my doula came back and we labored at home for another, gosh, like until the afternoon. And, you know, my doula would put me in different positions on the birth ball, or have me go into different positions to try to, you know, get me going into active labor. And the sensations and the pain actually became so great that I actually started throwing up. And, you know, at this point, you can't really eat when you're in labor. I was trying to drink water, or like electrolyte, you know, water, honey water. But the sensations were becoming so intense, and she put me into child's pose, and it became so intense that I vomited. And that really actually kind of set the stage for something that would lead to me not having the birth experience that I dreamed of. So I ended up vomiting out everything in my stomach, all water, everything. And, you know, it seemed like my labor was progressing. And so by that next evening, so at this point, was it the evening or the afternoon? Honestly, I can't even remember. When you're in the birth portal, things like time just kind of literally dilates, and it was like day, night, day, night, and I'm trying to be linear and logical in this story of the telling of the story, but all I know is, like, we ended up transferring again. We drove to the hospital again. My doula followed us. They checked me again, and this time I was 4 centimeters dilated. And they're like, okay, we can admit you. And I actually felt huge relief in being admitted, because by this point I had been laboring at home for like 36 hours, and I was tired, and I had nothing in my stomach. I started to get really tired, but I was like, okay, I'm 4 centimeters. Okay, like, only 4 centimeters. I have 6 centimeters to go before I can start pushing, but like, it's starting to move. So from here, you know, hospitals are hospitals, and, you know, the hospital that I was in, it was great. The nurses were fantastic. The midwives were fantastic. But, you know, it's a hospital. And when you're in labor, they monitor you a lot. And so once they admitted me, because I had been laboring for so long already, they really wanted to check the baby. They really wanted to make sure that she was okay, and so they put like a fetal monitor on, and it ended up that she was a little stressed out. Now, throughout that next night, they were very concerned with her, and were concerned the fact that I wasn't dilating fast enough. And so, you know, when you have worry and concern placed upon you while you're in labor, it was like I felt like I was going through, in a way, like psychological warfare. Like I was, in a way, like at psychological war with dark magic that was trying to, it felt like dark magic trying to be cast upon me to doubt my body. And you, like, if you follow me, you know me, like, I'm like, all right, no, like, I had strong boundaries. I was like, no, like, this, like, I, in my consciousness, like, I'm not accepting this story. I'm not accepting this story. But throughout the night, what ended up happening is, like, the labor continued to increase. It was becoming, you know, those contractions were, surges were stronger and stronger, and I continued to vomit. I continued to throw up all the water in my body, and I started to become very dehydrated. So they ended up putting in a catheter and were monitoring my urine, and they started to become very concerned with the fact that, one, I wasn't producing any urine, and two, the urine that I was producing was showing signs of blood in it. So at this point, I had a catheter. They ended up putting in a monitor into my uterus. Before they put the monitor into my uterus, my water hadn't broken yet, and they were concerned that because I had been in labor for so long at this point, they were like, we think we should break your water, and it will, you know, increase, it will quicken the labor. And so I agreed to that because like a midwife checked me and she's like, your amniotic sac is literally like bulging out of your cervix. It's like wanting to break, but it's not breaking. So she ended up breaking my amniotic sac. And she's like, this is like the strongest amniotic sac I've ever felt, which I guess is a good sign of health and vitality. And by doing so, that increased over the next like hour or so, that increased my dilation to 7 centimeters. But they were concerned that the contractions, one, were perhaps affecting the baby, and two, that I still wasn't, like, at this point I was like over 48 hours of labor, and that I still wasn't fully dilated. And this was like the midwives coming to talk to me, and they were great. They were like, you know, like, this, we're not sure what's going on. And at this point I was exhausted, you know, I was dehydrated, I was exhausted, and, I was having blood in my urine. So I went through, most of the night until I literally couldn't take it anymore. I was exhausted. I had, 48 at around, I want to say at around like the 50 hour mark, I was so exhausted. I hadn't slept in days. I had no food in my stomach. I had no water. I was completely depleted. And the contractions were so strong that it was making me vomit. And like, I remember asking my doula, I'm like, does this happen? I never heard in any birth story that I ever heard, I never heard of any woman vomiting from contractions. She's like, yeah, I've known women to vomit from contractions. I vomited probably like 4 times. And like, in a way, in my, like, even reflecting on this and sharing this, like, there's like some shame around it. I'm like, oh, like, other women are stronger and they could like endure it without vomiting, but it's like I couldn't even help it. Like, you know, you can't help these bodily reactions. And so because I was so tired, and you know, the OBs at this time were just concerned that I hadn't slept. You know, when you don't sleep for days, that's just concerning for health. And that I opted for an epidural. And that was a really hard decision for me, but I just, you know, once you reach the edge of your capacity, like, you just need some relief, you know. And I really needed rest. I really needed to be able to rest. And the contractions were sort of, I likened it to feeling like a freight train was coming. It's like, I could feel when it was coming. I was like, oh gosh, like, I can feel another one coming. And like, it would surge and just, you know, like, take over your body. And you know, I was doing my best to sound in a very deep way and to like be in my body. And but once you've been laboring for so long, it's just so exhausting, you know. Like, so many surges that you could only handle so much. So I ended up getting an epidural in the middle of that night, I think at like 2 or 3 in the morning, so like I could rest. One moment. So that I could get some rest. And the thing with the epidural, the experience that I had was it didn't like fully numb me. Like, I wasn't like, I could still move my feet. I could still move my legs. I definitely didn't try to stand, obviously. But it just kind of took the edge off of the contractions. Like, I could still feel the contractions, which was really surprising to me, because whenever I had thought of an epidural before or heard about it, it was like, oh, it completely numbs you from the waist down. And that wasn't my experience. I could still feel the contractions, and I still like would go inward, and I would still be like, whoa, hold on. I would still, like, you know, ride it, but it just, it took the edge off. So, for the next 24 hours, more or less, let's say 20 hours, I continued to labor. And I became more and more dehydrated. They ended up putting 6 bags of saline in me. They put, like IV bags, they put bags of saline, or, you know, with electrolytes in it, because I was just so dehydrated. And it started, my kidneys started to show signs of damage, of injury. And the OBs would come in and they're like, we're really worried about your kidneys. You know, like your urine is, you're not producing enough urine for the amount of water that we're pumping into your body. And 2, it is bloody. This is really scary and we don't want you to have permanent kidney damage. And another thing that also started to happen because, I don't know why, was I started to show signs of an infection in my uterus. And so they had to give me antibiotics intravenously. And at this point, you know, they were monitoring baby and baby was actually doing okay. As long as I stayed calm, baby was calm. But for a good 17 hours, every OB on shift would come in and they're like, you need to have a C-section. You need to have a C-section. Like, your kidneys are going to get damaged. Like, this is going on too long. You're not, like, this, we're worried about you. Like, this, like you need to say yes to a C-section. And being who I am, I was like, I can do this. Like, let me birth my baby. Like, let me do this. Actually, not even let me. It's like, I'm doing this. I am doing this. And that was really hard for them. Like, I think that they got really, from my perspective, a couple of the OBs got really annoyed with me because I was just, you know, they would come in with their concern, with their concerned eyes, with their concerned brow. And I would be like, no, I'm doing this. You know, this is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. I am literally at my capacity of everything, but I am birthing my baby. So by the next night, this is now January 3rd into the 4th. So let's just say midnight, January 4th. Mind you, I started going to labor like midnight, January 1st. The OB came in and was like, okay, listen. You, like, your test levels of your urine and your blood is becoming critical. Meaning, 1, either your kidneys are becoming injured to the point of damage, or 2, your baby is oriented in a way where she's pushing on something internally that is blocking your kidney's ability to release urine. And this can be very dangerous for the kidneys and for the body. And she's like, I know you want to birth your baby, but, you know, for your safety so that you don't need to be on dialysis and so you don't damage your kidneys, I recommend a C-section. And at this point, friends, there was something in my mind where I was like, I don't think this is going to happen for me. And I told her, I was like, okay, look, give me,
I need a couple more hours. I need to try for a couple more hours to see where I'm at. Also, I didn't mention at this time, like throughout the like last 12, 15, 20 hours, they had also given me Pitocin to try to, you know, push the labor forward. But my cervix wasn't dilating. And at that midnight, I think I was at 7.5 centimeters. It hadn't really dilated. There had been other things they had been tried. They had put me in different positions. My doula was amazing. She was there like the whole time. Actually, she left a couple times because I was like, you go home and sleep. You need to go see your son. Like, come back. I'm probably going to still be here. But she was there through the middle of the nights with me, you know, coaching me and helping me and advocating for me. But at around midnight or one on January 4th, the OB, you know, really laid it out, and, you know, my kidneys were just not doing well. And I had an infection in my uterus that was brewing. And so I declared, I was like, I need to try just for a few more hours. And so like I like called out to God and I set the intention. I was like, please, like, let me fully dilate and let me be able to birth my baby. And my doula had taken some photos of me during this time, and maybe I'll share. I don't know. Like, there's a couple of them that are pretty powerful. As I had been up for almost 4 days and I hadn't eaten anything, and I was severely dehydrated, but I had told my doula, I was like, I feel like I'm getting a fifth wind, and like I can do this. And like breathing and visualizing and just like connecting with my cervix and talking with my body and visualizing the opening. And I was like still having that like vision in my third eye of like my cervix, like the torus opening, and like really just like softening my pelvis and my body in the best way that I could, and everything that I knew how and what to do, and everything that I had learned from YouTube and podcasts and books and stories from women, I like called upon that. And for 2 hours I just went as deep as I possibly could, and I got up to 9 centimeters dilated. And at 2:30 in the morning, the OB came in again and was like, your kidneys are still worsening. And she's like, and I just want you to know that not even being at 10 centimeters yet, you still would need to go into the pushing phase, and the pushing phase can last a while. And she's like, you really need to understand the levels of danger you are riding for your kidneys, because you would still need to push. And in that moment, I knew that I needed to have a C-section. And I asked everybody to leave the room besides the nurse. The nurse had to be there because she was monitoring me. I asked everybody to leave, and I just broke down. I literally wailed, like the biggest grief wail that I have ever wailed in my entire life. I just let it out. I'm sure everybody in the labor and delivery ward heard me. And I asked for John to come back in, and him and I just cried together. We cried because none of what had happened was what we had envisioned. You know, it was like really, he really wanted me to have like the birth that I wanted, and he wanted it for our child. And like the epidural was really hard for him to witness me getting and, you know, having. And you know, he witnessed me through the whole thing, and it was really intense for him. There's like other things that happened that just brought him to his edge, and we just held each other and cried in that room. The nurse was there. I didn't mind. We just cried, realizing that everything that we had wanted for this experience wasn't happening and wasn't going to happen. And so I called the OB back in, and my doula came back in. I said, okay, I can, like, okay, let's do it. I will have a C-section. And yeah, friends, making that decision was so hard for me. And it was in that moment of making that decision that I felt extremely failed by my body and by my cervix. That's just how I felt at the time. And so, you know, C-section is abdominal surgery, right? So, you know, they wheeled me into the operating room and set it up. And I was so, so scared. Like, the amount of adrenaline that was pumping through me, I was shaking uncontrollably, you know, from my hips up because I had the epidural. And they don't want you shaking, you know, in your lower half as they're doing abdominal surgery. But, you know, then John came in, and I'll spare the details of what a C-section is like. But when they went to, you know, remove my daughter from my body, I heard the OB say, oh, she's facing forward. She's sunny side up. And it was in that moment I realized that is why I wasn't dilating right properly, I guess. Not properly, but why it was so hard was that she was oriented in the wrong way. Now, I have a whole other thing, maybe I'll go into this later, but like why nobody caught the fact that my baby was oriented improperly within my womb after so many hours in the hospital is beyond me. I'm probably actually going to file a complaint with Kaiser, be like, why did nobody, no midwife, no OB, caught the fact that my baby was oriented sunny side up. She, instead of facing backwards and, you know, properly oriented to go down into the birth canal, she was facing forward. And when she was born, she actually had a huge bruise across her brow and a hematoma on her head from the contractions pushing her into my pelvis, because she, her face was being pushed into my pubic bone. And so actually, had I gone through the pushing process and tried to push her through my birth canal, I possibly could have broken her nose or like damaged her face. So, you know, hearing her cry, and, you know, they, with C-section babies, they have to go and check them out. They don't, like, it wasn't immediately on me. There was like a good 3 to 4 minutes where she was off behind me and John was with her and doing skin to skin, and I was asking him about her and she was crying, but then they came and placed her on my chest and she immediately latched onto my breast. And you know, then I had a daughter, and then I was in the hospital for 3 days healing from the C-section, you know, with this newborn. But the experience of the C-section, after having labored for so long, and I felt like I tried so hard. I tried my absolute hardest to birth my baby vaginally. I really felt like a failure. If you hear a noise behind me, it's actually my refrigerator. It's clicking because it needs to be cleaned. And I don't really feel like moving. So that's what that sound is, if you can hear it. This is an imperfect episode, friends. So, you know, for a good 2 weeks, for the first 2 weeks postpartum, I was a mess, honestly. And it is very typical, you know, the first 10 days postpartum, you can, because of the crazy hormonal shifts, it is known that you can get depressed, have baby blues. That is a very typical thing. But for me, I just couldn't mentally get over the fact that I felt like I had failed, that my body had failed. That's like, why couldn't I birth my baby? Why didn't my cervix dilate? After so many years of being in relationship with my cervix and my womb and my body, like, why did this happen? You know, why was my baby oriented improperly? Why did this happen to me? Why? I felt, honestly, friends, I felt like I was a fraud. I was like, oh my gosh, everything that I have stood for and spoken about, I feel like I have failed it all. And in that mental experience, I feel like a big part of me died. You know, the idealistic pie in the sky. Oh, you know, if you have these thoughts and do all these right things, that the body will follow. And that wasn't my experience with birth. You know, hindsight now, you know, several weeks out, almost 2 months out postpartum, I now see that my body actually was probably doing the right thing. You know, my cervix wasn't dilating.
Yeah, being forced through the bones in a way that she shouldn't, or like isn't designed to. So, you know, as I've come out of the hormonal cascade of immediate post-birth and have grown into motherhood over these last 2 months, and, you know, have healed from the C-section, and, you know, have healed, you know, as, you know, time tends to heal all things, or most things. It doesn't heal it fully, but it gives space. I now can come to a place within myself where recognizing that my body's intelligence was actually doing what it needed to do, which was to protect my baby from further physical harm, or to protect me from further harm to my body. But I will admit, friends, that there is a, you know, low current still of feeling like I failed. And I know, like, many people are like, no, you didn't fail. Like, your baby's beautiful. Like, she's healthy. She's everything, you know, worked out fine, you know, in the end. But I can't help that feeling. And as I mentioned before, that experience led to a piece of me to die. And the way that I approach my body and the way that I approach women's bodies, and, you know, also recognizing that had I been in labor, say, 150 years ago, and labored as long as I did, and became severely dehydrated and was having kidney issues with my baby oriented improperly, possibly getting stuck in the birth canal had I pushed, like, I probably would have died. You know, I probably would have died in labor, or they would have had to choose me or my baby. And that is also a really real thing that I've also had to rectify with is, you know, my underlying anger towards Western medicine and Western obstetrics. And, you know, there are things that were said and that happened during my labor process that I need to do some forgiveness work around. And also recognizing that had that not been available to me, I'm not sure how my body would have fared. And getting really real with myself that, you know, prior to the advent of modern medicine, childbirth was one of the number one ways women died globally. And I believe in the United States in the 1800s, the statistics are like 1/3 of women died during childbirth, you know, for whatever reason. And while I was in labor and while I was making the decision to have the C-section, and while I was on the operating table, you know, awake, I could feel the veil of death right there. You know, I wasn't necessarily close to dying, but I could feel it there. I could feel how easily it could have gone bad had I not had these medical options. And someone once said to me, I forget who it is who said it to me, but that birth, when you are in birth, you are actually treading the line between birth and death. That veil, that portal that is opening, and that veil that you are crossing, that the two worlds between birth and death are right there. And I feel like I tapped into that in a visceral way that I have yet to integrate. So to say that my birth experience transformed me is an understatement. I'm really not even sure yet how it has transformed me. I'm still integrating it. I'm still integrating into new motherhood. And the other week, I went to a prenatal women's circle, which is a circle for either pregnant women or mothers with babes in arms. And I started going to the circle when I was pregnant. It was started by my dear friend Meredith Rahm. And on the last circle that I went to, which was about 2 weeks ago, I had my baby. I got to introduce my baby, Trillium, to the women, which felt really beautiful because, you know, I had met them when I was pregnant. But Meredith spoke about how the path of birth and motherhood is like the story of Inanna, which, you know, one of the most ancient goddesses who really characterizes, like the myth of her characterizes the death and rebirth process, where I don't know the exact details of her story. From what Meredith shared is that she died and came back to life, but she's represented by Venus, the morning star, who descends out of the night sky or the morning sky to then be reborn into the morning star, into the morning sky. But that her myth is one of having everything that you once knew who you were to be either taken away or to die, to be cast away from yourself. And you find yourself in this void space, in this in this in-between, which is actually the realm of the cervix, ironically. Cervix is keeper of the in-between. Interesting. I'm thinking right now, like, maybe Inanna is the keeper of cervix. I'll play with that thought a little later. But that when Inanna is reborn, she is reborn by gathering pieces of herself that she thought she lost, but they are transformed. They have changed. And I can feel how I was cast down into the descent of death of who I was in my birth process. And I'm still in the void space. I'm still unsure of what's going to be reborn as this new identity of mother after this, you know, relatively harrowing experience I had in labor and birth. But what I do know is that my heart has been blasted open in the process of having a daughter. And every time I look at her and hold her or nurse her, I am reminded as to why I chose to take this path, why I chose the path of motherhood. And regardless of how it all unfolded, it, for me, was perfect. And I believe for myself, I'm not going to put this story on anyone else for their birth experience or any experience of their life. But for me, the birth story that I hold now for her is shaping me into a stronger, more resilient, grounded person. And I felt this when I broke my arm a few years ago, the amount of pain that I experienced, physical pain, like the acute experience really grounded me and shaped me, pulled me away from the hyper spiritual, you can manifest anything. You can just breathe and meditate and everything will be okay. Like when you're in physical pain, it's clear that that doesn't actually work. And I feel like for my birth process now, it's like another layer, or I feel so much more grounded in my body, in the reality of this world. And having walked that line of birth and death and really felt how, had I lived in another time, I very well could have died. I probably would have died, or my baby would have died. I just feel so much more humble. Excuse me, friends. I have to clear my throat. I feel so much more humble and like I'm more in reality than I've ever been, if that makes sense. I the visceral nature of life and reality is right at the forefront. It's at the tip of my nose, and I see and feel so clearly life. I mean, it's ineffable. It's hard to explain. But I have a scar to prove my journey, you know, the C-section scar. And I am holding the vision. You know, John and I do want more children. We're hoping for, we're praying for more children in the future. And I am praying and holding the vision that I will have the chance to birth in the way that I want to birth, vaginally. And that this past birth story that I've experienced with my daughter Trillium, that I can do it another way. But what I know is you can't really hold on to anything too strong because things happen. And I've known many women to need a second C-section or for things to happen for whatever reason. And I know that life will life. And all I can do is hope and pray and work with my body. But I have learned so much and I have am so more clear about things I will do next time and things I'm going to get clear about. And ironically, this is the realm of cervix, you know, getting clear about what we need within our body and allowing ourselves to be in the in-between of death and rebirth and choosing to dive into those realms regardless of how scary or painful or potentially destabilizing it is. Even when I don't even try, cervix continues to be a guide of my life. Oh, man. Well, obviously, there is always so much more that I could say about my birth story, but I think I'm going to leave it at that. If you've made it this far, thank you for listening. It feels vulnerable, but really good to share with you all my birth experience. Because, you know, on Instagram in particular, or even like on YouTube, on social media in general, I find that I only see really beautiful, positive birth stories. You know, it's like they're in the water, in the tub, in a beautiful setting in their home, or, you know, free birthing, and it's all pleasant, and I'm so happy for those women. But I wanted to share my story to kind of balance it all out. Be like, hey, like, I really wanted that. I tried to set myself up for that. I thought I did all the work. I thought I was going that path. But it didn't happen. And in fact, nothing in the way that I planned happened. And I'm sharing to not scare anyone, to not be like, oh, beware, but just to be like, hey, life's, and we can plan all we want, but sometimes we just have to surrender to how things unfold and to how God wants the process to go. At least that's the way that I am leaning into it. I still trust my body. I still trust my physiology. And I am excited to try again in the future. Alrighty, friends. Well, I hope you have a beautiful day and hopefully more to come soon. Recording podcast with a infant is a little difficult. I'm sorry if this seems choppy or like not perfect in any way. I'm doing my best, but I just really wanted to get it out there. All right, friends, have a good day and I'll talk to you soon. Thank you so much for joining us today, friends. If you want more cervical wellness information and content, check out my website, cervicalwellness.com, or give us a follow over on Instagram at cervical wellness. Please share this episode if it felt right and true for you. And until next time, friends, remember, we've got this.